Money Radio. Thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to welcome Michael Malone. He is a writer. He's been covering Silicon Valley and high tech for more than 30 years, twice nominated by the San Jose Mercury News for the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. He has been the author or co-author of more than a dozen award-winning books, and his new book is The Intel Trinity. The Intel Trinity: How Robert Noyce, Gordon Moore, and Andy Grove Built the World's Most Important Company. Michael Malone, thank you so much for joining us today.
How are you?
I'm good, and the book is pretty good, too. I mean, this is really a very complete breakdown of what goes on at Intel, as you describe it, the world's most important company. A lot of people, if you were asking them to name the world's most important company, might not go with Intel. Why did you?
Because after all these years of covering, I've basically covered Silicon Valley from beginning to the present and known all of the CEOs and the founders. And ultimately, it comes down to this. Everything in the modern world now rests upon semiconductor devices, on computer chips. And the high church of the computer chip, the guardians of Moore's Law, which is the metronome of the modern world, is Intel Corporation. So in the end, it all depends upon Intel. So it really is the most important. Even during hard times, it's still the most important company in the world.
And its roots really go back into Silicon Valley more than I realized before reading the book. Back to Shockley and Fairchild Semiconductor, actually Fairchild Camera and Instruments, I think it was.
Right, Fairchild Semiconductor was the division in Silicon Valley that's now become the historic company.
And a lot of folks probably know about Gordon Moore, or at least have heard of Moore's Law, which really is kind of a guiding principle for all tech. But review very quickly, and then we'll get into the other main characters here.
Sure. Early 1965, Gordon Moore, who runs the labs at Fairchild, a company that's only about, at that point, 7 years old, sits down, and for an article for Electronics Magazine, he plots out the power and price of memory chips of the era. Very, very, by modern terms, astonishingly low power, just a few thousand bits of memory. And he only had about two generations to look at, but he plotted them out, and he realized they were making a very sharp and familiar parabolic curve going up right off the top of the sheet of the paper. So he had to go get some other kinds of graph paper, logarithmic paper, and he got a straight line. And he said, oh, well, that's interesting. It looks like the power, the performance of chips is doubling every couple years. And from that, eventually came to be known as Moore's Law. And Moore's Law, in the end, it first of all defined the semiconductor industry, then the electronics industry, and you can make a pretty good argument it defines the world right now. The global economy rests upon Moore's Law.
There could be a good argument for that indeed. It really made for some great challenges for Intel, but before we get into some of those challenges, let's do a little bit of history, because I think even if some folks have heard of Moore's Law or heard of Andy Grove, who was CEO of Intel for many years, not so long ago, a lot of people may not have heard of Robert Noyce.
And Noyce, in many ways, is the most interesting one. You can say that Gordon Moore will be immortal because of Moore's Law. People are going to look back 1,000 years from now and see this extraordinary burst of innovation and change that was driven by the integrated circuit revolution, the digital revolution, and Moore's Law. People now know Andy Grove. I mean, he was Man of the Year, cover of Time magazine, wrote a number of best-selling books, and he was arguably the best CEO of the second half of the 20th century. He took Intel from still a struggling company and made it, in the end, the most valuable manufacturing company on the earth. It's sort of like what Steve Jobs accomplished. Noyce is the most interesting because he's the most charismatic figure of them all. In many ways, he's the most charismatic figure in Silicon Valley history, even more than Jobs. He didn't have Jobs' dysfunctionalities, let's say. Noyce, if he had lived long enough, would have won probably at least one Nobel Prize, and you can make a good argument for two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Then he founds Fairchild, After marching out of Shockley Transistor with seven other guys, the Traitorous Eight, he runs Fairchild, makes it the hottest company on the planet, then turns around, quits, and starts Intel, and leads Intel through its early days. He's a truly remarkable character. To have met him was to, you always remember what it was like, because he gave off this aura of you just kind of wanted to be him. Helicopter skiing, fast cars, fast planes, took enormous risks and always succeeded. He ended up being called the mayor of Silicon Valley, but then died suddenly. And as a result, he sort of fell out of history.
Yeah, it sort of fell out of history, but he also made the history of Silicon Valley. You think about so many things that we think of with regard to how Silicon Valley works today. Some of the first iterations of that were through Robert Noyce. You take a look at the disconnect between the East Coast and the West Coast. Well, there's the story of Fairchild Camera and Fairchild Semiconductor under Robert Noyce.
Absolutely.
The Easterners tried to come in and tell him what to do, and that didn't quite fly. So he went out and created Intel.
Yeah, I would commend to anybody one of Tom Wolfe's greatest pieces, articles, is about Bob Noyce. And to read that is to really understand the appeal of the man and also what he accomplished. In the end, he created Fairchild Semiconductor, and National wanted Fairchild Cameron Instrument back in New Jersey wanted him to come back there and help run the company. They wouldn't give him or his people out here stock options. They weren't allowed to participate in this giant success they created, and that's why he blew it up. That's why he walked away. And when he walked out of Fairchild, Fairchild, in a sense, disintegrated. It rebuilt itself again, but it was very different. But those 150 companies that spun out of Fairchild when Noyce left created the modern Silicon Valley.
So we also have a way of venture capital that was involved there. And then we've got the story of how Silicon Valley tends to spread the wealth around through stock options and much more. It really is kind of a defining set of circumstances that went on to define Silicon Valley.
Yeah, Silicon Valley essentially has two starts. It has one in the late 30s with Hewlett and Packard coming out of Stanford. And that's sort of this, I don't know, it's sort of the ideal up there in the hills and around Stanford University and Bill and Dave with their enlightened business practices creating this great company. But it's hard to duplicate Hewlett Packard. To build a company that's going to compete in a ferocious marketplace and move at a breakneck speed and never allow itself to stumble for long, that's what Noyce built. And in the process, between Shockley and Fairchild and Intel, Noyce is the key figure. And from that, as you said, arose the venture capital industry, because one of those traitorous eight that walked out of Shockley was Eugene Kleiner. And we still hear about Kleiner Perkins public venture capital because they... Mm-hmm. They're the big venture capital firm. So Noyce helped create the venture capital industry. He created a company that took enormous risks. At Fairchild, he built a giant frat house, basically. It was the craziest company in Valley history. Every crazy company you read about in the tech world, including all the ones in San Francisco these days doing social networks, they're all spiritual descendants of Fairchild. And then the company that just is dedicated to driving the technology forward unrelentingly for 50 years, that's Intel. And those are all Noyce.
And so just some true genius there. But then you go over to Gordon Moore. In addition to Moore's Law, what will Moore be remembered for?
He's the gold standard of integrity when it comes to engineering. He is the ultimate engineer. I mean, we have two essential role models here in the Valley, and I guess across the world in terms of technological innovation. One of them is Steve Wozniak, and he's kind of the Mozart of tech, of engineering. I watched him building the Apple I, and he actually dreamed in computer assembly code. I mean, he was that deep in. But as a leader, as a statesman, it's Gordon Moore. He is the man of integrity. If the technology says it can be done, it can be done. He's never taken on too much credit for anything. For a man who, you know, is one of the richest people in the world, who is got the defining law of the modern world named after him. He's remarkably humble. In fact, I just heard he returned from a fishing trip the other day with his two boys. When he was running this giant corporation, he'd go out collecting rocks with his wife in a camper. So he really brings that sort of purity of engineering to the digital age.
And then Andy Grove, who is kind of an unlikely fellow to pop up in Silicon Valley and really related more to or associated more with Moore than with Noyce.
Yeah, Andy didn't like Noyce, ironically, because they ended up being very much alike. And I think I gave Andy the last word in the book, and it's about Bob, which will surprise an awful lot of people when they read it, especially those who knew them. Andy is ferocious. He's very, very brilliant. He plays to win. He will not allow defeat. These guys come from very different sources, by the way. This is what one of the things, the reason I call it the Trinity, is this is a trio that somehow worked together that on paper should not have worked together at all. Because you have Gordon Moore, the son of a sheriff on the California coast, soft-spoken guy, a real intellectual, academic, engineering type. You have Bob Noyce, the sort of golden boy who never made a mistake in his life. He, you know, always graduated top of his class, champion swimmer, you know, kind of everybody's ideal person. And then you have a preacher's son from Iowa. And then you have Andy Grove, who survives the Nazis and the Holocaust and from Hungary in Budapest, and then manages to survive Stalin's Iron Curtain, escapes from that as a college kid, gets to America, and his incredible brilliance starts to show, where he just catches up with everybody, then passes them in college and grad school. And he ends up at Fairchild, watching Bob Noyce lead and thinking, this is the worst, you know, the most incompetent manager in the world, because he can't take a position, he can't fire anybody, he wants to be a nice guy. And so Andy adds the element at Intel of the not nice guy. Andy's the guy who gets things done. Andy's the guy who says things absolutely straight, who will fire people to their face, and he makes everything run right. And the key to Intel, I gave a speech at Intel the other day, and I kind of shocked everybody, because I got up and I said, you know, this company has made more mistakes than any company I've ever seen in 50 years of living in Silicon Valley. And it was kind of a, you know, shocked response from the audience. And I said, that's because companies that don't make a lot of mistakes come in two forms: the new startup company that just makes one big mistake and dies, or the boring company that tries to never make another mistake and fades away because they're no longer obsolete. Intel made more mistakes than anybody because they've been around for 50 years and they've constantly taken risks. This company is still taking risks. I mean, if you read the paper just the last few days, it's taking big risks again. Mm-hmm. It makes mistakes, but then the crucial thing is it recovers from its mistakes. And that's Andy's contribution to Intel. Every time Intel stumbled, even if it was his own fault, Andy would grab the company by the scruff of the neck, pull it to its feet, kick it in the rear end, and keep it moving forward. And that's what made Intel such a powerfully successful company for the 20 years of his tenure, and why Intel kind of lost its footing the last 10 years and is just now beginning to learn how to be that kind of ferocious company again.
Mm. We're talking with Michael Malone. He is the author of The Intel Trinity. The Intel Trinity, and we've heard some of the history of Intel, and as we continue our conversation, we'll find out a little bit about some of those mistakes, because we don't typically associate Intel with mistakes. We'll also take a look at the future of Intel. The Intel Trinity, how Robert Noyce, Gordon Moore, and Andy Grove built the world's most important company. The author is Michael Malone. The conversation continues in just a moment. Money Radio, thank you for joining us. We're talking today with Michael Malone, the book The Intel Trinity. You mentioned right before the break there, Michael, that there were plenty of mistakes at Intel. I'm trying to think of some, and I remember there was some sort of a mix-up with the Pentium processor at one point.
Mm-hmm. The Pentium bug.
But it didn't seem to last very long.
That's because the company did one of the best recoveries I've ever seen by a corporation. It's a textbook example of how, when you screw up, how to fix it. I mean, I can go through 50 years of Intel's history real quickly in terms of mistakes, because the mistakes turn out to be as important as the successes. At the very beginning, Intel just knocked the technology world on its ear by coming out with three major products in three major fields, something that was considered to be impossible in those days, DRAMs, SRAMs, that sort of thing. It couldn't be done. Intel did it, but then it couldn't build them. It had the designs, it was manufacturing them, but the yield rates were heading towards zero. They couldn't get them out the door running. So the company had to scramble and figure out how to build these things right before it died. Another historic event was if you'd lived and looked at Intel 40 years ago, you would have said it was a memory company. In fact, it was the most important memory chip company in the world. Nobody remembers that now because at a certain point during the battle with the Japanese corporations, the price of memory chips went down so far that if Intel had stayed in that business, it would have gone bankrupt. It had a whole other business, microprocessors. But because at this point Bob was away from the scene, he was doing stuff at the national level, helping the industry against the Japanese. Gordon and Andy stuck to memory because that's what they had built the company to do. Everybody else at Intel knew that they should get out of memories and get into microprocessors. And the famous story is that Andy and Gordon were sitting in an office, and I think it was Andy who said, you know, if it wasn't us two, if it was two other people sitting here, what would they do? And Gordon said, they'd get out of the memory business. And Andy said, well, let's walk out of the room and come back in as those two guys. And they got out of the memory business. And now, you know, when we think of Intel, it's microprocessors. It's only microprocessors. That is a
very
prelude
quickly
to what they became.
The future is going to be very different as well. There will be another transition. We're looking at Intel moving into the Internet of Things. We're looking at mobile computing.
Yep.
What is the future?
Intel made a terrible mistake about 4 or 5 years ago. Craig Barrett, to his credit, took a giant risk and took Intel into networks. Well, networks weren't the future. They thought they'd have PCs going strong for a long time. He should have taken them into mobile. As a result, for the last 5 years, Intel has been scrambling to get into the mobile business from about a fourth-place position. Well, the news this week is their numbers are up, and they're starting to really make a dent in that world of, you know, smartphones, tablets, that sort of thing. So that was a terrible mistake, but that's where they're going. They're going to go into mobile. IBM and Intel are really driving chip technology to the point that the announcements of the last few years suggest that Moore's Law is going to be around for at least 20 more years, which is crucial to the world's economy. And then the big baby coming out there is the Internet of Things. And that's the Internet was built for human beings to communicate with each other. The Internet of Things is the Internet where devices start talking to each other. They just forget about us.
It's seamless.
You know, when your car pulls into a parking lot, the car's going to tell the parking lot they're there. The parking lot's going to find an open slot, and it's going to bill you. And you're not going to be part of that process. Estimates are it's 100 times to 1,000 times bigger than the Internet we know.
Michael, 20 years from now, are we still going to be calling Intel the world's most important company?
Yeah, I actually think so. There's been a number of new semiconductor companies coming along, including big ones like Samsung, China, and Qualcomm, making their mark in the business. But in the end, the only company that really is the guardian of Moore's Law that keeps things going is Intel. And I've had every single leader of Intel tell me at one time or another over the last 40 years that they would rather die than be the person blamed for ending Moore's Law.
And I'm guessing that 20 years from now, the Intel Trinity, the book, will still be an important book telling the history and the future of Intel. The Intel Trinity by Michael Malone. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.